Good consultant would have been good. A good consultant would have been good. Yeah. I don't know where we got Wallace, I guess.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the joint meeting of the City Council, City of Arroyo Grande, as well as the City Council Planning Commission for Wednesday, September 22nd. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Reynolds?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Here.
Councilmember Costello?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Lubin?
Here.
Mayor Ferrara?
Here.
Commissioner Arnold?
Here.
Commissioner Fowler?
Here.
Commissioner Keene?
Here.
Commissioner Brown?
Yes.
And Commissioner Guthrie?
If you would all please stand, face the flag, and join me in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Of the Planning Commission. I know the last thing that we need these days is another meeting on the agenda, but we do appreciate you taking the time to be here. These are important items, and I'd also like to thank my colleagues for once again scheduling yet another activity on your busy agendas. I'm hopeful that this will set a precedence. We're long overdue for a joint meeting. And I'm hoping that in the future we can perhaps schedule these semi-annually at least so that we don't have to wait for them to be issue-driven. I think a check-in every now and then is important and critical, and so I look forward to more of these in the future on perhaps a more regularly scheduled basis. So with that, we'll move into item number five, discussion items. Steve, you want to kick it off or...
Rob Strong, up. Preparing this report, presenting this report.
Mayor and Council, members of the Planning Commission. This is an item that has been previously considered and recommended by the Planning Commission. It is basically a economic development strategy focused on hotel-motel development. It was reported to the City Council on May 11th, at which time the Council suggested the joint meeting for the purpose of discussion. On the screen is a attachment, which is a map indicating six possible focus sites, one at Trafficway and Cherry, a second at Grand Avenue and West Branch Street behind the Chevron station, a third site at Halcyon, Fay, and El Camino Real, a fourth site depicted at East Grand Avenue and Barnett, which is an extension of El Camino Real, a fifth site adjacent to Corcoran's near East Grand Avenue and Bell, and a sixth site near Camino Mercado and West Branch Street. These happen to adjoin existing visitor service facilities, including hotel-motel, are close proximity to the Freeway 101 corridor and are thought to be suitable sites for a range of hotel-motel size from 50 to 100 room potential on each site. The purpose behind the economic development strategy is really to enhance the city's potential transient occupancy tax as well as its share of the regional visitor service and retail trade. There will be, if these sites were to develop, as suggested, some impact on existing hotel motels, but our primary competition is not within the community of Arroyo Grande, but in much larger installations, developers. With that, if you have any questions, either the commission or the staff could attempt to respond. And I think that they are deserving of comment. If you have any findings of difficulty with any of the sites or feel that other sites are equally apparent opportunities, we would like your guidance in that regard as well.
Okay, thank you. Just as sort of a backdrop on this issue, the lodging deficiency in the city, I think, has been brought forward on a couple of occasions. Some of the sites that are in options 1 through 6 have surfaced before. Some of them have not. And in addition to that, recently, in terms of activity on this particular issue in the city, we have conducted surveys and gotten some community feedback with regard to the appropriateness of establishing a mixed-use plan south of town in our sphere of influence to look at perhaps a larger, more focused destination resort lodging type thing that might exist down there as well. So, and also, I think a few years back when we developed our economic element of our general plan, the economic plan, we identified lodging as well as a shortfall. So I'm very happy that this item has surfaced. And I think, Jim, since you folks raised this issue recently for discussion, that I'd like to turn to the Planning Commission first and let you facilitate any input from the commissioners, questions or clarifications on the staff report, anything that you'd like to amplify on what Rob has presented. Are your mics on there?
Tim indicated he has no questions. Dan, do you have any questions of staff at this point?
Have any questions? I would like to. You mentioned it, but I would think that since it is a long-range plan, that we do include the Frederick's property as in the economic development, because this is not something that's going to happen in the next 2 years. But since it's a long range, I think it should be included as one of these sites because it is in our sphere and also on our land.
Rob, have all the property owners been contacted as far as interest goes?
Not all. We have difficulty in contacting the owner of 5, although we have attempted to contact representatives. That property happens to be one of the many that Martin Poland owns within the community. We've talked to the property manager and relatives of the family and told them of our interest in development and redevelopment of several properties, this one for hotel, motel, or highway-oriented development. Number 4 is also a existing used car sales facility, and we have not made any direct site nor freeway orientation. There are possible redevelopment sites that might be available. If there are sites that are of interest or in the Planning Commission or Council opinion should be identified, the only substantial site that remains is coming to you soon as a specific plan amendment at Cortland and Grand on the S&S and Day properties. Other than that, most of the properties are substandard or lack access and exposure that would attract a motel. And none of them have freeway visibility. So it would take a step out of the ordinary to market those sites.
That's all I had. Thank you.
Yeah. As we discussed these before, so I'm pretty well familiar with what's going on. I have always questioned number 2 because of the traffic inlet and outlet getting on the Grand or West Branch there. I think it'd be a very difficult site to do. I don't think we ought to take it off of the plan, but I see that as a lot as a site that would be very difficult to accommodate a hotel or motel. Thank you.
The discussions with the Saritari family that owns the Chevron leasehold, as well as the undeveloped adjacent property on the north side of Rio Grande Creek, would actually utilize a shared driveway with the Chevron station. The easternmost of the two driveways that access that Chevron station is also an easement to the undeveloped property. We've also had discussions with John Cooten, owner of the retail complex further east, and exploring the concept of that also being used as a shared driveway. That driveway has secondary access further down on Traffic Way. So the attempt, if these properties were proposed for development, would be to process through the normal development review, any traffic issues, environmental issues, development concerns would be addressed in the normal course of development review. The economic development strategy doesn't change any of that, and it doesn't preclude alternative uses. It does give a preference or a priority towards visitor service and asks for consideration of that as a part of the development review.
Anything else? Jim?
Yeah, that is kind of a prelude to my question, and that is the language that you put in here that relates to how we would make that kind of decision if an alternative project came forward. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to read the second one because it's shorter, but the finding that we would need to make would be that adequate opportunities for visitor service and lodging are available at other undeveloped or underdeveloped sites with equal or superior location without the property in question.
Right. The first language is currently a part of the recommended development code amendment case number 03008, which will be considered by the City Council at the first public hearing scheduled for September 28. It is not to dictate a specific land use out of the broad range of land uses that zoning allows, but to identify the city's design and provide guidance. This is not a shall, it's a should of the design guidelines and standards. And this language, I think, is superior to the current recommendation.
On the issue of language, I guess, if we come back to what we're being asked to do this evening is kind of an addendum to what was just discussed. The other alternatives on page 3 state simply that we are being asked to review and provide comments regarding site-specific opportunities or constraints of identified locations, suggest any additional sites that should be investigated or, if necessary, eliminated from the discussion on lodging or potential lodging, and then provide other policy or priority concerns regarding recommended economic development strategy. So that's, again, sort of a backdrop. Anything further from the commission at this time?
I'm a little concerned in the alternative with equal or superior location. I think that could be a difficult finding on a couple of these properties, specifically the Dorfman property, where I would consider that probably the superior or possibly the Camino Mercado property, both those being superior. And so to make those findings might be difficult. If we scratch those five words, basically, the paragraph would have basically the similar, but I think we'd have no problem making the findings.
Okay. Anything else?
Nothing.
All right, then we'll move to council comments on this, and I'd again like to kind of just keep this as informal as we can. Councilmember Costello, why don't you start this for us?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I take it then that the project that was already intended for and approved on Site 6 has been withheld or canceled, or status of that project is now not going to be completed?
The time extension has been approved by the city. However, the property owners have indicated that the design was put to bid and felt to be infeasible at this time, and they are considering alternatives, and they are, in fact, considering hotel-motel alternatives.
Thank you. I can share in Commissioner Keene's concerns on site number two in terms of access. That may prove to be a bit of a problem downstream on this. But by the same token, also access onto sites four and five in that traffic that will be proceeding to the west on Grand is going to have to turn left into those properties is also going to be a little bit problematic. That doesn't mean that they're not potential sites. I think they are and should be considered.
Rob, a couple questions. First, you started out by talking about the substantial demand that's been through the inquiries that you've received. Does part of that deal with feedback maybe from folks that are looking for lodging that can't find it in this community? Is the Visitors Bureau made mention of that? Is there any kind of public input in regards to this demand that you refer to?
No, we have not done any market analysis nor verification of need. The staff is attempting to collect information that may be available from visitors and conference sources to provide numbers of rooms in existing facilities, room rates, occupancy estimates, so as to provide economic data to the inquiries. But we're not at this point basing our economic strategy on a specific market study.
And I'm assuming that would take place if a developer were going to look at entering into that realm, that those studies would certainly be part of their performas that they would be putting together.
That is correct. We have been asked for the data. It has just not been produced by the city. We've advised them to contact the Visitor and Conference Bureau, other Chamber of Commerce sources, and to do their own research. This is the type of research that they are happy to pay for if they can find a potential site. They do a site-specific market comparison. They don't like to just shop by community only. They want to have a place within the community.
You also mentioned earlier that there were that several proposals, a couple, I believe, have been submitted. Of course, one of those would be on Site 6, and you also, I believe, mentioned Site 3. What is that correct?
Sites 2 and 3 have also had specific inquiries and proposals.
Sites, where are they at in the process?
The city has not received either pre-applications or formal applications from any property owner, including six. So while we've had discussions with those inquiries and interest and preliminary design discussions, there has been no submittals to the city, nor is it the city's intention to get into design and development facilitation. We're really just trying to guide developers as to whether or not the city has sites, and if so, what information is available on those sites. And we put them directly into contact with the property owners or their real estate representatives.
In regards to Site 6, we have an approved project that if the developer decided to move forward, they could outside of this. And this would, of course, they would be grandfathered in, and this particular ordinance wouldn't affect them.
That's correct.
If they chose to move forward with their approved project.
That's correct.
Okay. And then in regards to Sites 2 and 3, has the concepts that you've at least thrown around at this point dealt with? What's the thoughts from staff in regards to at this particular time and in either including or excluding that site in this particular process?
There's certainly no reason why it couldn't be identified in a strategy. I think with the specific plan prerequisite and the lack of an interchange to serve that property, the fact that it might be considered for a country inn, destination, resort, or some other non-freeway-oriented visitor service could be a component of a specific plan, but it is not within the city's current initiatives of development code amendment to identify that site any more than just to say a specific plan could include that.
And just to follow up, we've currently in, or actually recently conducted workshops on that particular site in regards to its land use. Where are we at in that process?
That's a good question. I mean, at this point, it's been we recently held a meeting facilitated by the mayor and our county supervisor and Caltrans and SLOCOG, working on, and the representatives from the families working on the transportation portion of the issue and the interchange, and really working on developing strategies how that project could be devised and proposed and funded. So it's really kind of focused on that effort now. I would expect the next, we're probably going to be going in two directions at that point, is one, continue to work on the transportation project infrastructure portion, but then also continue to work with the families based on the input we've received from the communities to have that utilized by them in developing their proposals and utilized by the city to evaluate those proposals. So that's kind of the next step. In terms of this particular item, I think the real purpose of this strategy, there's really two purposes of the strategy. One, as the mayor mentioned, that the visitor serving functions is within our overall economic development strategy. What we're trying to do now is go through that strategy and take out particular components and develop specific strategies for each of those components so we can kind of move to this next step of implementation. And by doing that, the objective of this is to give us some specific sites that we can go to developers and say we have some. It doesn't forego the overall development review process. There's no guarantee you'd get a project approved here, but we can at least say these are sites that the council has given some blessing to, that they're appropriate for, you know, some type of visitor-serving development. And that's very helpful when we meet with potential developers. And since we have had a lot of discussions about the appropriateness of some kind of visitor-serving project on the Fredericks property, I think it would be appropriate to have that for us to be able to add that on the list when we talk to these developers, even though it's much more premature than the other sites. We would make that noted.
I would add that we have had inquiry regarding Destination Resort, and we have directed them to both the Williams and the Fredericks families for consideration.
Okay. It's kind of open to whatever's brought forth. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Those are all my questions. Thank you.
Councilmember Owens.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Rob, if, for example, something did happen on part of the Williams property and the Fredericks property outside the city limits, the city would have a minimum amount of input?
Because these properties are within the city's designated sphere of influence, they would fall within the memorandum of understanding that was negotiated between the city and the county and LAFCO. The city would have more input on those properties than any other referral that the county might give on properties outside the city. But regarding a decision, it would still remain a county decision unless and until annexation is proposed, which requires the specific plan as a prerequisite.
Okay, thank you. Now, on this, I have no problem with any of these sites, although I do agree with Councilman Costello that 4 and 5 are going to have some problems as far as access off of Grand Avenue at certain important times of the day. But my question being on site number 2 is this map doesn't show the meandering of the creek down behind it that I can come up with. And how big a site is it? What's the square footage of that site?
The site is effectively bisected by the creek, and about where the star shows on the screen is the developable portion of the site behind the Chevron station, which is the little two-parcel corner. I don't know whether we have a pointer here that I might use. Is that not a pointer? Anyway, the southern half of the property behind the so the creek runs approximately this alignment right through here. And the southern portion of the property is floodplain behind Miner's Hardware. The northern portion of the property with this L shape is the potential hotel motel site. This is the Chevron station. This is the adjacent Kuden retail development where the number two is positioned to point to the star. This is the creekside development known as Village Promenade on Station Way. So the creek is approximately here.
It would be one of the smaller developments as far as a hotel motel is concerned, correct?
It would take two or three story construction to achieve in excess of 50 rooms and probably could not under any circumstances exceed 75 due to parking limitations without structural parking solutions.
Yeah, well, that you know, and then you've got the access problem, and as you stated, if you could work something out with the adjacent property owner, that may work. But it's, you know, when you go through there at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and want to get in or out of something there, it's a pretty tough situation. I like the idea of 1 and 6 because it's got real good freeway exposure, and somebody that's traveled around a little bit, that's what I like, is somewhere where you can get on and off to a motel or hotel without running all over town and getting lost in it. But I think that all these should stay on the table and move forward with it and see where we go. Thank you.
Enough issues with East and West Grand at that intersection there anyway, so I think we have to watch that. And I know that would come back at some future time if there was a proposal.
Right. Again, the concepts that have been discussed with the property owner and the prospective developers are to utilize the two existing driveways on either adjacent property, one of which is a part of the Sawatari ownership, the other one of which is willing to consider a joint parking and driveway agreement. There's a third driveway that would then be made accessible off of Traffic Way, and again, traffic would be a specific focus issue of any environmental studies associated with development.
I understand that, but I also understand that the that third driveway off that leads onto Traffic Way is a significant issue if you're trying to make a left turn to go back to Grand. So, I realize traffic is an issue that would be brought forward with any specific project.
Yeah, as staff's concerned with some of the challenges, we're also this particular site is somewhat exciting to us also because it has a combination of features of it has freeway access, yet it also is the one site, which has been an objective of ours, is to have a hotel site that would directly serve the village itself. And this is the kind of the one site that really provides that potential opportunity. So,
Site 1 also would serve the village as well.
Yeah, it would, just not as directly, but yes, it would.
Right. The other thing I wanted to make sure that I'm correct in understanding is, even if this goes through, the language is such that it doesn't preclude other forms of development on these properties. We're not specifically saying nothing's going to be built on here except visitor services in terms of hotel motel. Is that correct?
I think the intent is correct. The language that has been established in the previous Traffic Way mixed use district is the first language that says all other permitted uses and minor uses permitted shall be considered subject to conditional use permit, including a finding that visitor services are not feasible due to site-specific building or property configuration and conditions. So if you were presented with site number two, which is in the Traffic Way design guidelines and standards, and found that the traffic creek environmental or other conditions made it not feasible for that purpose, you would then consider alternative uses, whether it would be a smaller scale retail, an expansion of service operations.
So what you're saying, though, is that if we were to go with this language, then specifically it would preclude other forms of development unless there was a finding that it was not feasible.
Correct.
Unless we went with the second alternative language.
And you could use either language or just the anticipated finding that if you found a constraint that would make it inappropriate to develop for the designated hotel-motel purpose, such as traffic, then you could certainly consider an alternative use that would be less dependent on traffic access.
Well, where I'm coming from is maybe a middle-of-the-road situation where we're identifying specific available lots for these types.
It would be appropriate to refine the finding and say adequate opportunity for visitor service and lodging are available at other undeveloped or underdeveloped sites without the property in question. That would be an easier finding for either the commission staff or council on appeal to make, so that it would not bind any property owner. The intent was a guidance, not a mandate.
Thank you. That's what I would be more comfortable with. Other than that, I do, and again, on the Fredericks and Williams issue, I recognize that there is a specific plan requirement. However, it would seem to me that we could put this into the mix that says this is an area that is available should the right development come forward and the development of a specific plan with that within that. So it's not something where we should just leave it out and forget about it, especially since we've had some inquiries already concerning those areas. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. A couple of comments. First of all, on the Fredericks-Williams series of meetings that have taken place, I think both of the property owners have taken to heart the community survey that we've conducted. And in terms of a sort of a structure for moving forward with some concepts for a specific plan, the features that surfaced and the priorities that surfaced as a result of those surveys, I think provides that kind of direction for them. We're kind of between a rock and a hard place with regard to moving forward with them, both of those properties, as relates to the interchange and traffic circulation. And while we don't have a lot of opportunity to go into it today, I think a lot of information surfaced as a result of our last meeting with COG and the county and Caltrans with regard to funding and so on and so forth. So I think as potential developers come forth, as long as it's consistent with the specific plan and consistent with the direction that I think we heard that the community wanted to go, you know, there may be some way of alternatively funding an interchange, which is why I don't want to exclude the Williams. I want to make sure we refer to that area south of town as our sphere of influence. And because together, I think they stand a much larger potential for delivering services and for constructing facilities and services that the city needs, much more so than if they were to, you know, to be separate. So the other thing I wanted to clarify, Steve, in terms of the language, if I'm reading this correctly, this is going to come back to the council on September 28th. Is that correct? So we're going to we're going to be looking at language on September the 28th.
Right. Yeah, the purpose this evening is to get some consensus, I guess, or address
in the city in terms of providing lodging for visitors who come to the city and who can, in fact, support us in many other ways if they would choose to stay here instead of other cities. So that's one aspect of economic, the economic consideration. The other aspect of it is simply the basic transient occupancy tax as a revenue source, which, again, in comparison to at least some of our neighboring jurisdictions, we are woefully deficient. So I think in terms of determining what we build in any of these six locations, while we yes, want to make sure that we keep our options open. Again, as a backdrop, those two considerations loom large with me. The TOT and also providing adequate lodging to keep people here and visiting other services within Arroyo Grande instead of going elsewhere. In other words, we need to have more rooms here. And so however we achieve that, I think that needs to be on all of our minds as we move forward. Looking at the other charge that we have this evening and kind of going through each of these locations, as many of us have already stated, I would not eliminate any of these. I do have some comments, though, as we go around the kind of take a tour around the city here on number one, Traffic Way in Cherry. There had been some discussions with the developer on that particular piece of property with regard to a particular developer that wanted to come in and perhaps fashion something that was non-standard for that chain that would be more along the lines of a Country Inn. And I would support that in that location, being mindful of the fact that we have also had discussions with that developer, the zoning change notwithstanding and land use notwithstanding on that particular piece of property. We were looking at a combination of residential, some value-added ag use, and lodging. So I don't want us to lose sight of the fact that those discussions have occurred in the past. So those are my comments on number one. I think we could have some form of a Country Inn and bed and breakfast type of thing that would be facing Traffic Way that would work well. Item or location number two, I look at that. Yeah, there are some traffic constraints there, but I also look at that as kind of a challenge and a way in which we might get creative. And I'm envisioning, having looked at that property, the Council Member Ronalds is right, the creek kind of meanders through there. And I'm looking at the piece that's perhaps undevelopable as being landscaped with some benches and some areas where people can perhaps have lunch connected to the hotel. I'm looking at the ingress and egress not so much as a barrier, but one, a challenge that could be controlled. I've stayed in many locations right off the freeway throughout the state that are very similar to this configuration. You drive in one way, you drive out. Traffic circulation is another major concern of ours. And while location number three seems to have good potential for circulation on the site itself, we have to look at problematic circulation around that site, namely Briscoe and Halcyon. And the timing of how mitigation for Briscoe-Halcyon gets put in place in relation to the development of this particular site, which would add more trips to an already marginal location. I think we have to be mindful of that. I agree with Councilmember Costello and some of the other comments with regard to sites 4 and 5. I think circulation is going to be a challenge. However, particularly for 5, I had a question. I see the star there, Steve and Rob, but how many of these parcels are we talking about? How big is option 5 on that at that location?
The Grand Motel is located here. Corcoran's is on this site and might be, because it's under same ownership as the L-shaped piece on which the Star 5 is located. Those two properties are both owned by Martin Poland, so the bulk of the motel development was perceived to be potentially on the L-shape in combination with the Corcoran's restaurant parking area and driveways. So effectively it's a and it could be combined with or an extension of the existing adjacent motel. This is the mini storage complex, so it's a very limited site. It is, again, 50 to 70 rooms
possible with two- or three-story configuration.
And is Grand Avenue, does Grand Avenue have a center turn lane there?
It does not, and that is potentially an issue which, independent of any development proposals, will be coming to the Planning Commission and Council in the near future.
Okay, so I think maybe if a center, if there's room for a center turn lane, if we're looking at enhancements to Grand Avenue down that far, then perhaps we can, there's some way of mitigating it if the intensity of use for a smaller lodging facility is not that great. We might be able to work with 4 and 5 in terms of making left turns and so on and so forth. I guess I have a bit of a different take on Site 6. And once again, I would have to come back to the traffic situation and specifically circulation at Camino Mercado and Branch. I was concerned when we approved that project as a an office building because of the proximity of any driveways, both on Camino Mercado and Branch, to that intersection. And even if we assume that it's signalized with lodging there, particularly if that's one of our sites where we're considering 100 rooms, we would have to revisit the circulation and traffic issues.
Our driveway separation and take a better orientation to Camino Mercado, which is the location of the other visitor service facility, the Premier Inn, uphill. The specifics, again, would be subject to conditional use permit, traffic study evaluation. The current study could act as a base, but there would be need to be an addendum that would specifically address a hotel-motel. That could include a companion of conference facilities and or restaurant facilities on site as well.
Okay. Those are my comments and observations. Anything more specific that you would like from us this evening, Rob?
No, actually, we got more specific than I anticipated.
Okay. Anything else from the commission? Anyone want to add anything? Okay. Anyone else up here? All right. Thank you. And we can move on to the next item. Item 5B is a consideration of cable casting, the Planning Commission meetings.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the Council, and Mr. Chair and members of the Commission. The City has been contracting with AGP Video to cable cast City Council meetings since December 2002. And those services are paid for by a public education and government access fee, which is charged by Charter Communications to all their cable subscribers. In April of this year, Councilmember Dickens requested and the City Council agreed to direct staff to prepare alternatives for also televising Planning Commission meetings. Those alternatives were presented to the City Council at the June 8th meeting. However, in response to some concerns that were expressed by the Planning Commission regarding that proposal, it was decided to place the item on the joint meeting agenda for discussion this evening. It's estimated that under the current contract and system, to add Planning Commission meetings would result in probably about an additional $20,000 or so in cost per year. That is about $10,000 above what we have available in PEG access funds. Therefore, general fund monies would need to be used, which is something that staff probably would not recommend. However, AGP Video has also made an alternate conceptual proposal, which is an area that they're trying to go in anyways, and that is to replace the manual cameras with mounted robotic cameras. That would be controlled from an alternate control room, and that would reduce the costs involved in the work and therefore would reduce their costs for both televising Planning Commission meetings and City Council meetings. And as a result, they believe that they could, under that system, be able to present both the commission and the council within the existing revenue sources. So with that, that kind of lays out the options of where we're at, and wanted to really just open it up to
our meetings. I personally have received just numerous positive feedback as to access to our meetings and just kind of awareness as to what was going on. And the more and more I thought about it, it just seemed appropriate that that both the council and the Planning Commission as policymaking boards and critical elements of the city process, that the more we could get the information out to the public, the better. And the best way to do that would be through telecasting. My thoughts were primarily based around just providing greater access to the public. Cable casting is just been wonderful for, I think, the community to spend the time and to tune in as they please. But I also think that there's a lot of misinformation about how local government works and how it functions. And there's a great deal of work that's done at the commission level that the public doesn't really get a chance to see, and probably doesn't understand how that works. And the increased public awareness in regards to getting it out and cable casting at the commission meetings, I think, would just be extremely valuable. So based on that, it was my idea to at least broach the subject of bringing it forth, looking at the financial feasibility, and seeing whether or not there was consensus as to making this happen. So there was some, I think, some ideas from us, and then it was brought to the commission. And I think it's important that the commission also sees the value in this and understands what the what the PIG access dollars can be used for, and what the potential there might be. So with that, it's a matter of just kind of feeling comfortable. I know that when we discussed this originally, there was a lot of questions about what would happen once we opened it up to the television viewing public, and what we might find in regards to the potential of grandstanding up on the podium and so forth. And I think that what I've seen, at least in the last several years, is that certainly we always have those members of the public who take advantage of that, but I think the benefit to the public far outweighs any kind of potential misuse, and I've seen it being a huge benefit. And so anyways, with that, I guess, you know, my thought would be just to bring it back to this particular forum, get some feedback, go through maybe some questions and answers, and look at the possible benefits. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Councilmember Rollins, you want to comment?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. And when we started this several years ago, I was a little skeptical about it. I didn't know whether it was going to work or whether it wasn't going to work, and I think we were all apprehensive about how we were going to act on TV. But I was afraid that we were going to have a lot of grandstanding going on from people who wanted to get their point across, it, and then the other people say, well, it's good, and we're see what's going on, and you guys are actually showing up and doing what you're supposed to do. So I can understand where the Planning Commission is coming from, saying, well, we don't want anything to do with this, but I think it'll work. You know, I'll give it a try anyway. Those are my comments.
Councilmember Costello.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm kind of amazed at how many people do mention to me that they tune in and watch the council proceedings on a regular basis. Rather surprised at just how many people are involved and participating, at least in viewing what's going on. I think that it is an excellent tool and provides an opportunity for far more people to at least stay informed as to what's happening in city government. I think that given the opportunity, it would be an excellent tool
to educate people as to what goes on at the Planning Commission and just how much work goes on. Sometimes I remember fondly that I'm not sitting at the Planning Commission meetings. They seem to go on longer than the council meetings. And they do discuss a lot of extremely important issues that are of import to the community. So I can support going forward with this. I think that it is something that would be valuable to the community. I'd like to make sure that we don't expend any general fund dollars to do it, though. So I think that we do need to be kind of careful and creative in how we use the limited funds we do have. But I think that would be worth pursuing.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem?
It certainly wouldn't hurt. Having said that, and I mean, I don't have a big thing against it, but having said that, I'd bring a couple of things forward. One is that in our staff report, it says when this item was discussed by the Planning Commission, the floor planning commissioners present expressed opposition to cable casting of the meetings. So the Planning Commission themselves have said, at least four of them, I don't know what the fifth one wants, but at least four of them said, no, they don't want to do it. The second thing is that it's true that both bodies are policymaking to a certain degree. However, I'd state that in most cases, the Planning Commission is a lot more technical and detail-oriented. And while it could be interesting, like, I mean, our meetings are just so fascinating that people just stay up late to watch them. I would think that the Planning Commission meetings, after about 30 seconds, are going to get extremely dull for the average person out there who's listening to the technical aspects of whatever subject they're talking about. Having said that, I also have an issue with, I'm not sure if we want to use this opportunity to be, pardon the word, Steve, but manipulated into permanent equipment, which we had a problem with at the beginning. This system has worked for us and has been very comfortable. And as Tom indicated, we've all kind of gotten used to ignoring the cameras and ignoring the screens up here. So I'm comfortable with the way things are going with the equipment. And so at this point, I mean, it's not like I would vote against doing it.
A few of the other jurisdictions were televising it. Since we've been doing it, I have not had one person who's come to me and said that they would rather we not televise council meetings. In fact, it's been exactly the opposite. Many folks have come to me and said, don't you dare stop televising the meetings. This is how we stay informed. And so much so that, you know, it's kind of embarrassing. And, you know, I always come back and say, gee, you know, your evenings must be really boring if you're going to spend time watching us. And a few of them have said, yeah, we admit sometimes if we watch late at night, we fall asleep. But if we fall asleep, we watch it earlier the next time and catch the piece that we missed. So, I haven't heard anyone come back to us and say, don't do it. It's been quite the contrary. I guess one of the reasons why I am supportive of doing this, and I know one thing, I would rather have my job than your job because of the nature of the work that you do. It is very technical, as the Mayor Pro Tem said, and yes, it does get much more involved. And for the lay person, they may have difficulty following. But there's also a segment of the community out there that would be very interested, I think. I've not heard anyone negatively provide any negative feedback to the county, and I've talked to some of the members of the county. The County Planning Commission meetings are televised on 21. I really do feel that it is important. A lot of folks get educated from their front room these days, and this is another way in which they can become much more familiar with the Planning Commission and the work that it does here in our community. So I would want to hear more about this fixed camera equipment and some of the financial aspects of it. And I agree that televising any of our meetings should the revenue should be generated from the PEG funds. So before I would, support something like this, I would have to ensure that the PEG funds could adequately extend to, fund televising the Planning Commission meetings. So anyhow, that's I think those are our views. Jim, you want to chime in on this?
And I'm going to suggest we start here with Tim because I think you're the fifth.
I'm the one that wasn't there.
Okay.
I would say very specifically that I would agree with Councilman Costello that we shouldn't be using general fund dollars. Having said that, though, I've already heard feedback very specifically that it is helpful to know what council's doing. People can watch it in the comfort of their living room. They can do it at various times of the day. You have elderly people that don't want to travel at night. There's a number of reasons to consider doing it. For me, the most important thing is it seems like the people that come to our meetings come after the fact. They're upset about something that's already started, it's already gone in place, and they act as though we didn't get notice of it. We didn't know about it, and they may have. I'm not going to comment on whether that's a reasonable complaint or not. I'm just telling you it's out there, and this is another way of dealing with it. So I'm highly supportive of it. I don't want to use general fund dollars, but it seems that there's been an avenue that's possible to do that, and I would highly recommend it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm one of those people that tends to watch your council meetings at home, so I know the advantage and good things about televising the events. However, I'm very much against using any general fund money for it. When this was first broached to the four of us that were there, the immediate response was no, because we felt that at that time, when we were just generally talking, that it lent to pontificating, which is, of course, a problem that we see from all of us anyway. So I'm still not really for doing it, but I'm not adamantly against it either, except for the funding. I don't believe we should deal with the funding.
Well, I haven't changed my opinion. My main reason is I believe that we have a very casual style. I don't think it lends itself real well to television. I know that from my own personal standpoint, when I've come to speak to the city council, the cameras have made me uncomfortable because it's not something that I do on a regular basis. I believe that if our meetings were televised, the cameras wouldn't bother me after a little while of getting used to it. But we get a lot of people that come in that are uncomfortable speaking to us just coming up to the microphone. I don't think we need to add to their anxiety by having the cameras also. But the primary reason is I do believe that our style, that we are really digging into the issues deep, that there's a lot of horse trading that goes on during our meetings, that I don't think that lends itself real well to the more formal style of the city council meetings. And so for that reason, I would continue to object to having the meetings televised. That's all.
Okay. I am one of the ones that voted against it, and probably one of the ones at that meeting that was most adamantly against it, because of the same reasons that Ed talked about. The Planning Commission has a charge from the city, and the way we try to make the policy, what little policy we are able to make, the horse trading, if you want to call it, and the compromise, and what's taking different opinions from each commissioner doesn't lend itself well with trying to be formal and politically correct for TV. I think that we get a lot more done without that. We have never not heard anybody that wants to talk about a particular issue. They come. We even open up, just as the city council does, we open up public policy and zoning and project-specific determinations. So I haven't been convinced that it would serve the community any better. In fact, I think it would be a detriment to what the Planning Commission does. Thank you.
Jack.
I guess I'd start by saying that I, as I said at the time when it was a planning committee, I think dollar for dollar that we'd be better off to find some way of making the staff reports and whatever paperwork that is involved in the planning and council meetings available to the public online. It's my understanding that that's not doable with these funds. I mean, if that's the case, so be it. But I still do think dollar for dollar that's something that the public to have this in advance before the meeting, rather than to come and reading the one copy that's available here at the meeting would really facilitate a lot of public input. Beyond that, actually, I do think the Planning Commission works very differently than the council, and I'm not sure that's because you're on TV or not. I mean, you guys are much more formal anyway, but we do have a much more collegial sort of workshop atmosphere. There's a lot of back and forth between the planning commissioners. There's even back and forth between a whole lot more back and forth between the presenters and the Planning Commission, and I'm not sure that TV would lend itself to that. Actually, not trying to picture this manual camera trying to go back and forth as often as we went back and forth last night with the Parking Commission, trying to even possibly capture that on TV. So there's, because of the way that the Planning Commission works, and because the I think when you get these kinds of items, they've already been worked over. There's not as much discussion as takes place at Planning Commission. I just don't think TV would facilitate that. On the other hand, there is a lot of stuff that takes place at Planning Commission that doesn't take place anywhere else, that the public really does need to know. I mean, they can read the minutes, but that's not nearly the same as seeing it on TV. So maybe it's because we've never worked on TV. Maybe it'd work out the same, but I would doubt that we would see nearly as much of a collegial atmosphere as we have now. And but I'd certainly see where the public would benefit by knowing what goes on at Planning Commission level. I don't know. I think it's quite as boring as some of us might think. But
that's where we're at. Let me weigh in on a couple of things. First of all, I think it's and please don't misunderstand. I do understand where you're coming from. The larger issue here, though, is a recognition that, you know, our barometer needs to be the public. You know, we're here to serve the public. We're here to educate the public. We're here to process the business of the public. And if you look at not only Channel 20, but Channel 21 as well, if you want to talk about collegial atmospheres, you see workshops, you see community services districts. I mean, those folks have short sleeves and they get down and dirty. And the TV does not interfere with that process. There's a lot of horse trading that I see that goes on both of our public channels. That's what it's there for. So let me ask a question.
What we have to lose is once you start something in government, it never ends.
Well, usually, yeah, it does end, and it's generally tied to funding. But what we can do is tie something into the action itself, if we decide to do this, that takes it progressively and doesn't make it definite. And we can do that. It would be, at least you could say you tried it, and, or we can all say we tried it, and chose not to do it. It's better than saying no up front and not even trying, I guess.
Excuse me, but what about the possibility of revisiting this in 6 months when you have a whole new panel up here? Since you can see that four of us are probably pretty much against it, maybe it could just be tabled for this time and revisited when you have a new group of people to discuss it with.
If I could, I wanted to cap on to something Mr. Keene said, Commissioner Keene. If you'll remember back, our first televised sessions were actually the general plan amendment. And once we did that, it was determined that we had opened up the genie's box and pretty much said, we're going to go forward with it. One, we got comfortable with it, but two, we had already done it, and we got feedback that this was something that people wanted to see, and it was kind of hard to close it down after that. So I can understand where Commissioner Keene is coming from. Once you start this and you open that bottle, I'm not sure you can shut it back down again with the Planning Commission.
Well, I think there's something that Commissioner Fowler just mentioned that has some merit. Perhaps we do need to wait until after November to take another look at this. And, you know, you're absolutely right, but what happened when those cameras started rolling was they caught us at a time when there were highly charged political issues that were actually divisive issues. And if you want to talk about grandstanding, there was all kinds of it that took place during that general plan. It was a very hot-button issue. Not to say that you would never be confronted with those kinds of things, but I think that's the exception and not the norm. We were all in political turmoil around that particular point in time, so hopefully that would not be the launching pad for something that we might try. But there is merit in what Councilmember or Commissioner Fowler just indicated. I don't know how the rest of you feel.
That would be fine with me, giving it a chance to get resettled.
If I might, Mr. Mayor, with all due respect to Ms. Fowler, I think it goes beyond one particular appointed body or one particular elected body at the time. You're dealing with a larger issue of opening government to the local citizens, and it should go beyond a particular election or a particular set of beliefs. It has to go to the very idea that you want to open up the process as much as possible, regardless of how comfortable we may or may not be with that process. We need to understand that, in my sense, we have a duty to get that information out there as
to work it out. I do think it'll change, but in the long run, I think the benefit of the public having access to what the Planning Commission does, and frankly having two shots at most of the issues. I think that's another comment as well. What you see, a Planning Commission isn't always an exact repeat of when the same item comes before the council. I think the public having the opportunity to see it twice is actually a plus as well. It'll change the way the Planning Commission operates, probably. I mean, maybe we'll all just forget the cameras are there completely. I kind of doubt it. But I do think that the public access outweighs the risk to the process.
Mr. Mayor, I would think that also that one of the things that was mentioned was that you were a little bit concerned that people might not be willing to speak with cameras present, but that doesn't seem to stop anybody from speaking before the council in televised meetings. I'm not sure that meetings need to change simply because of the fact there are cameras there. I kind of think that initially there might be some stilted feelings about what was going on, but I think that what ultimately would settle down and there wouldn't be a great deal of change that would proceed from this. I think that what we might see is we might actually see a different dynamic ultimately coming at the council level, because people would be seeing things in the Planning Commission before they came to the council, and that might actually raise the level of participation and awareness at issues that came before the council. So I think ultimately it's a good thing. I think we really want to look at going forward with it, but correct me if I'm wrong, but even if we were to say tonight, let's get forward working on this, it's still going to take a number of months before anything finally really happens and any equipment gets in place and the television cameras start to roll anyway.
Mr. Mayor, if I might interject, that's another reason I don't want to table it for another 6 months, because that just puts it farther down the road in terms of actually happening, even if on a trial basis. If we're going to try it on a trial basis, let's start the process now, knowing that it's going to take some time to happen anyway. So that's just in response to Mr. Costello's
question for staff, Mr. Mayor. Steve, how long would it take to generate the additional funds, or what process, or how far in the program are they with adjusting and finding out how much money they're going to be short, and how are you going to come up with the extra 10 grand?
I think we were looking at two options here. One, the original proposal we talked about that would transition to the mounted cameras, probably to work that out, I'm estimating probably a three-month period. However, you did mention a second option of doing a some kind of test basis for a limited amount of time. And that is something we could do almost immediately. I mean, I would propose we just use the existing system. We do have some funding in place that on a short-term basis we could cover a few extra meetings and you know, pretty much televise those meetings and structure them just like we do the city council. It wouldn't really require much of anything different.
Mr. Mayor, if I may, there's a couple. Actually, there's three items that I'd like to address, and the, how you know better can we utilize the funds that we currently have, and the time space that we currently have available on our cable channel for the city of Aurora Grandy, and I think those are issues that that we should allow greater access to the public by letting them see what really goes on, not only at the council level, but at the Planning Commission. So that's an issue I think is paramount. The issue of the style, the tone, the format that the current commission feels is appropriate to conduct business, I think is a valid concern. But I think it's a concern that I would certainly like to point out that we have a professional here that videotapes, gosh, probably almost every city in the county and other forums. And I'd like to hear from Steve Matthews in regards to whether, you know, in his professional opinion, whether he has seen a change in once they start televising, whether the tone really has to change. I don't think it does. I don't think that your tone's going to be any different. I don't, you know, we don't act any different up here. I think the tone is set by the folks that are actually conducting the business. The tone that this council sets is much different than the tone when I used to come here 8 to 10 years ago. And it really has to do with the folks that are running the show. And I think what we've tried to do, and I think a lot of hats go off to both the current Mayor Ferrara and past Mayor Lady in trying to create a more friendly approach to the city. And that was certainly something I think that we've accomplished, and the cable casting has gotten us there. And before I ask if it's okay with the mayor to have Steve maybe address the issue of the different tones, the different styles that are out there, the last issue I think is paramount, and this may come off a little bit critical, but reality is this policy issue has nothing to do with the five of you sitting over there. It has to do with the issue of increasing public awareness and conducting the public policy making, whether it's policy or whether it's technical, and getting that out to the public, to me is the real issue. And if there's a segment of what goes on, there are literally hundreds of issues that go before your commission on a yearly basis that never come before the city council. Which means the public, unless they get up and go, you know, and get here, they're not connected to that. And granted, are they public noticed? Sure. Can they get here? Sure. Does it happen? No. And there's a lot of variables in regards to why it can and can't happen for the public to get here. But if we can, with the dollars that we have sitting in a pot right now, create that additional access, then my question would be, why not? So.
Do you want to go ahead and
sure. I could address a little. Steve Matthew, AGP Video. We are your channel providers and production company. Been doing this, I just had to sit there and add it up in my head, actually 9 years now I've been doing this throughout the county. We probably shoot some 400 meetings plus a year. We have two going tonight in Arroyo Grande. The first frame of government video that I ever shot in 1996 was a Morro Bay Planning Commission meeting. So Planning Commission in Morro Bay, as an example, actually is almost important, if not more important to some people, than what the City Council is doing, because it goes to the root of part of or had its chance to be a part of on a much larger level. If it was brought up by some of the members here that if they just feel that they had a chance at it and observed it happening, that there's a far less backside occurring. As far as the proposal, Mr. Adams has got it nailed. This is exactly what I was thinking to help provide more access within the budget that you have available. I'd like to borrow him and take him to a few neighboring cities because they're not quite getting it as rapidly as he is. what I'm trying to do is provide more government access to the people. I realize that fund, and nobody wants to go into their general fund. The only places that's happening is in the city of Morro Bay and at the county level. The city of Morro Bay, I keep going back there because they are the extreme example. They shoot every single, we shoot every single Brown Act meeting that occurs in the city of Morro Bay. My contract there is for up to 140 meetings a year in one city. They haven't ever gone past 110. But anything that is Brown Act goes on the air in the city of Morro Bay, even the appointments for all of the boards and commissions, which is probably the single roughest place to get videotaped, because here you're being interviewed for that position. Okay, some are uncomfortable with that or were in the beginning. Now it's become a very valuable part of the process. Both the people that are being interviewed and the council members are very comfortable with doing that on the camera in Morro Bay. Everybody knows what they're getting. Everybody gets prepped by coming through that to be on the air on whatever board or commission that they're on. Planning Commission is the next natural meeting. I don't foresee going past what your budget is in the PEG access, so I don't see that changing for years. But if you have a house system in place, then you at least have the option to do that, and other options open up. The crew can be cut in half. The cost can come down. You guys can actually throw a switch and shoot any meetings you want to here. It can become a more spontaneous thing. It also can become a valuable tool for emergency response situations and things of that sort. There's a lot of reasons that I presented this proposal. This is one of them. I kind of think you guys would get comfortable with it. It is part of the process, and everywhere else it's happening already. So I don't know. I'll answer questions.
Questions for Steve?
I have one, Steve.
Sure.
You said your staff would be cut in half.
Right.
I did notice, I was recently at a county supervisors meeting.
Right.
And I did notice that you still had the same number of people. You had somebody with the monitoring
right.
it, and you had a couple of people at cameras. So would it actually cut the staff in half?
Yes, it would, to install a house system here. And that's actually what's going to occur at the county level. In fact, permanent laptop system, and everybody can utilize it. Makes it simpler for everybody.
Within these costs.
And then you own it. And within this, yes.
You know, I know it's video jargon, but I wish there was some other way that you could describe shooting. What you do besides shooting public officials.
Videotaping.
Taping, something like
that. It is slang. It's in my PDA that way.
Any other comments? Observation? Well, the charge before us this evening for the council's consideration are the alternatives that are listed on page 2 of the staff report. We have options here, and I suspect we need to get consensus on these four options. Direct staff to proceed and request AGP video to submit a formal proposal, which would provide us with some additional information and costs and so on and so forth. Direct staff to place the item on the City Council agenda for further discussion. take no action on the matter or come up with some other form of direction for staff.
Mr. Mayor, I hate to interrupt, but under that last one, I think you had developed another alternative, which is to propose some type of test period that we could also pursue with AGP.
Which we could incorporate if the item were to come back to us as an agenda for further discussion, right?
Yes. Yeah.
What is the will of the council? We don't need a motion on this, just sort of a consensus, if we can reach one.
I could go along with a test period that we could then bring back to the council, and at that point, if it seems to be working, then request a formal proposal.
Well, let me ask this. Does it cost any money to get more information that would come forth from a proposal? Would there be any objection to going ahead and getting additional information with regard to a proposal incorporating the discussion on the agenda item relative to a trial period and then take action then after we've had an opportunity to formally discuss this under an agendized item? Anybody opposed to that?
Works for me.
Okay. That's what our direction is then, Steve.
Thank you.
Okay, that takes us to our final item this evening, which is 5C, consideration of the city water use and supply issues as they relate to land use planning and decisions.
Good evening. Good evening, council members and commissioners. The purpose of this item this evening is to focus on the relationship between land use practices and per capita water usage to determine if the city may more effectively reduce per capita consumption through a shift in densities, types of projects, and increased restrictions on landscaping. Just to give you a little bit of a background, as you know, during the development of the city's urban water management plan and the 2001 general plan, water resources were identified as a significant. Those options are identified in your staff report as well. We're pursuing those based on council direction. The council directed staff to proceed with the work on these options, but requested additional information analysis on each of these alternatives before taking any formal action. The council also requested staff to develop and implement a public education effort on water needs and conservation programs and measures prior to proposing any changes, and we're in the process of doing that as well. Staff believes that these options present a feasible strategy to meet the city's water needs both for short and a long term. Land use policy, though, is a significant factor in the city's effort to reduce per capita consumption, which is the primary purpose of this agenda item this evening. Higher density development with smaller landscaped areas results in lower usage per unit. There's a table that's provided in your staff report shows the average water consumption rate for the different land uses, the last column of which is the acreage of each of those categories, land use categories, high density, medium high density, and so forth. Currently, the city conditions discretionary development projects, that is tract maps and conditional use permits, and planned unit developments with a requirement to submit a landscape and irrigation plan. That includes current water conservation practices such as use of low-flow heads, drip irrigation, mulch, gravel, drought-tolerant plants, and mulches. However, these water conservation practices are not legally required under the development code. Approximately 60% of the water consumed is used for landscaping. And the purpose of the adopted water conservation program is to implement the best management practices of the city's urban water management plan. And, of course, in your staff report, the best management practices related to specifically landscaping are shown in bold, and they are that landscape water audits and be incentives, landscaping water conservation requirements, and landscape water conservation for new and existing single-family homes. The city's water conservation program is divided into two components. One is the phase one is for building retrofits, which is ongoing at the moment. Approximately 300 homes have been retrofitted to date, saving the city approximately 12 acre feet annually. And phase two is irrigation efficiency. And the objective, of course, of phase two is to reduce or eliminate the type of landscaping that is most water intensive, such as front yard turf and turf in the parkways. Programs identified include irrigation system assessments for the top water users, enforcement of water conservation codes, irrigation systems or landscaping rebates, and retrofit of the cemetery and with non-potable water. This evening, the staff has recommended that the council and the planning commission discuss the following information, the information provided in the staff report.
What's the actual date?
2004.
Okay. So then, has there been a cost? What was the cost, I guess, of those 300 homes? Because the one thing I'm noticing when I look at the doc is there's different options, but there's really no good way to do any kind of cost assessment as to what, how many acre feet you're saving by doing any given process. Because I'll specifically go to, towards the back. I think it was talking about the cemetery. There was a talk about $275,000, I believe, as a cost to use the reclaimed water for that. And I didn't know how to evaluate that cost per what you were going to save based on some of the other options in here. Has there been any kind of cost analysis done?
I don't believe we have a cost analysis that addresses your specific question. However, I can tell you just based on the retrofit program that we have now in place, we did do a competitive bid process, which included approximately 700 retrofits. We've completed roughly half of that, and I think the cost of that particular program was several hundred thousand dollars.
Okay. Then on the page 7, there's a table. The last column didn't have a heading. I assume that was acres, but is that correct?
That is acreage of those various land use categories.
So then, since the one was 2004, then on page 5 of the water conservation program, where it says irrigation system assessment for top water users, that has not happened since that's supposed to happen within the first 3 years of actually implementing the plan. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
I do, actually. Don, in your opening comments, you seem to indicate that we're dealing in a lot of ways with new development in terms of the landscaping and future use in terms of densities. Mm-hmm. I want to go to page 3 of your staff report, second paragraph. It says, it should be noted that the 1990 general plan only assumed 80% of maximum build-out and therefore estimated that the existing water resources could serve potential development based on that assumption. We're beyond 80% at this point, correct? In terms of build out, we're closer to a build out right now.
Rob, do you know what I think 20,000 was the maximum, and we're at 16,000.
Right. I would have to summarize similarly to Don. The general plan assumption in 1990 was that maximum development would only be 80% of potential land utilization. We are, in fact, now working on the 2001 plan, which recognized still that full maximum potential would not be achieved because we're substantially developed, but retrofit efforts and regardless of conservation efforts, which are just beginning, unless we turn around and reverse per capita consumption, we will not reach build-out before we run out of water supplies.
And I guess that goes to the root of my question, and that is, it seems like what you're proposing is saying that current residents that live here, that have resided here maybe for some time, are being asked to bear the burden of conservation so that we can reach that number.
I think that efficient water utilization, equitable water utilization, is an assumption. Community water use varies, and it varies predominantly on climate. Water supply varies, and it varies predominantly on the storage and resource capabilities of the community. When it comes to excessive water use compared to water use in San Luis Obispo, Arroyo Grande residents on the average are using a substantial amount more water per capita. Why? To some degree, it's because they are already utilizing recycled water for park irrigation. They are using a more aggressive conservation practice. They have adopted landscape standards and have smaller lot sizes and higher densities. If we don't achieve all of those, and part of our general plan policies are supportive of mixed use, higher densities, more water conservation to reach, plus supplemental water. I think it has to be recognized that we don't necessarily need to use every drop available because droughts do occur, and we are not equipped to withstand a drought, even in today's 95% utilization. A continuing drought will cause mandatory conservation. So bottom line is, I think that we have to depend upon conservation as one method of stretching the water resources we have, while at the same time developing new water resources during the planning period. If we fail to do either or both, then we basically will not reach build-out in accordance with the plan.
It also goes beyond reaching build-out. We have to be able to meet, you're saying we could possibly, with drought, not meet our current need?
Absolutely.
Just to add on, especially Rob's comments about the water supply end of it, we feel one of the things we're trying to accomplish here is the general plan projections have a number of factors. One is our ability to achieve that lowered per capita usage. But even if we're able to do that within the general plan, because it's so difficult to project out, the per capita usage fluctuates so significantly that within that, and given that instability and being able to project those things out, we have not left a very sufficient buffer in those projections to be able to,
you know, quite as obvious to anyone.
Well, we do have a water service worker that goes around and deals essentially with customer services, water turns on, you know, turn-ons for the for new water connections, turn-off for other services, and that person will be the one that will identify where the conservation efforts aren't being met or where people are going and violating whatever conservation efforts we have in place at the time. So that's how we would go about that.
So it'd be, in other words, it'd be conservation violations that are visible from the street. I
mean, exactly. Right.
Like the sprinklers running.
Like sprinklers, water running down the curb, those sorts of things. Yeah. Obvious.
That was my only question.
Councilmember Ronis, do you want to go first?
No, yeah, why not? Don, as far as all the city landscaping, parks, et cetera, is concerned, have we turned down the clock time on these yet? Reduce the time that we're running the sprinklers, or is it still the same as it was?
For our own facilities, we have. We're managing them a little closer. We're identifying exactly when, what time of day is the best, and what time of year we need to water whatever amount. So,
but where most of them have been set for 45 minutes or an hour, has it been cut down to 20 minutes or 30 minutes?
I think most of them have been cut down to the to the point where we can still keep
it. I know at the cemetery, for example, a couple months ago, we cut everything down 25%. So trying to save water on that situation there. A couple of things on the supply side is that a few years ago we had plenty of water and the dam was full and we didn't have to go through the retrofit and so on and so forth. But then with the retrofit came a bunch of new rules that we were all involved in, and we had to release more water downstream for the our aquatic friends. And that has resulted in the release of 1,000 acre-feet more this past year than we would normally let loose. I think 5,500 acre-feet or a little more this year. Mm-hmm. Generally, it was always the contract calls for 4,500 for agriculture and municipal uses downstream, but generally it was about 3,500. So there's been a change in the operating at that point in time. Now, with the habitat plan in place, it's about ready to be enforced. I think that maybe we'll get some relief from that. But I like the idea of all of the terms that we talked about before, the seven priorities that we set forth. I think one that we didn't really talk about and we should have last council meeting was the fact that we may need to look in a long-term situation at desalinization. I was down at the urban water meeting in San Diego a couple of weeks ago, and everybody in the West has exactly the same problem. They're implementing very strict conservation measures as far as landscaping goes, and the coastal towns are talking about, some of them have desalination plants or facilities already, and that seems to be the focus because, you know, the two big dams that control things are only half full, and who knows what's going to happen this next year. So all of the conservation measures and education.
Top paragraph about April 2004-2008. It says, thus far, 300 homes have been retrofitted, resulting in an estimated savings of approximately 12,775 gallons per day per home. 12,775 gallons is, what is that? Is that for 300 homes, or what does that really mean?
That is per home.
12,775 gallons per day per home?
Yeah.
Not per day.
No, per year per home.
That says per day per home.
Should be per year per home.
Per year per home. Yeah. Okay. Okay. that makes more sense. So we save 12,775 gallons per home. So each home saves 42.5 gallons.
I'm going to refer to my calculation right now.
I got my calculator out, and I get it. So with 300 homes, it's 42 gallons. So
here's the breakdown that I can give you. There's what we estimate is 35 gallons per day per home. And how do we get to that? Well, we used numbers based on the national research that there's generally 8 flushes of a toilet per day.
It's more than I needed to know.
And since we're installing low-flow toilets, there's a possibility of saving 4 gallons per flush. So if you take those 35 gallons per day per home and you multiply it times 365 days, you get 12,775 gallons per year. And that equates into, multiply that times the 300 that we have retrofitted so far and divide and multiply, and you come up with 12 acre-feet per year at this point.
And just best guess estimate, how many more homes maximum are out there in the community to be retrofitted?
We identified in the program some 3,000 out of the 5,600 service connections that we have. We've identified somewhere around 3,000 that we might be able to retrofit. And
so
how many of those?
120 acre feet.
Possibly, yes. We estimated about maybe 75 to 80% of those tops that we could actually capture.
Okay, that's the toilets. Now, how much of the water that our consumers are using is landscape use? Is it 60% or something?
It's somewhere around 50% of the water that goes through their meter at their curb gets used for things outside of domestic use.
Our target is 160 gallons per day per person. That's what we've estimated. If we confine our use to 160 gallons per day per person, we get to build out. We've got enough water to accommodate everybody. A question I have for you, and since we started discussing this council a few meetings back, I did a little calculating. How much water is my family using per person per day? And I took out the bills for the past year and figured it out. And lo and behold, we're only using about 160 gallons a day per person right now. So obviously,
to the land use and actually come up with the amount of consumption for the individual land uses, excluding the industrial, commercial, and other categories, irrigation.
Well, let's for sake of argument say we get to that. We get this figure X that's however many gallons, 30 gallons a day per person, something. Bottom line is, it seems to me we really have to do a major educational process with our community to let people know, first of all, how much they're using right now. And it's difficult to calculate. Like I said, I had to dig out all the bills and then figure out, well, how many gallons are in a unit and all this. And we need to do a major educational project with our community, let people know how much they're using right now, and then that there's a need for them to save. We're examining new sources, and that's great. That's the supply side. But on the demand side, with the assumption that we're in a prolonged drought period and it's not going to go away, we need to save water, no question about it. I think that we really have to put a major effort forward as a city to educate people the things they can do to save water. Now, that said, I think that it's critical that we do go forward with some sort of process to regulate and control how much new projects use water for landscaping to be a part of and component of that. So it's a roundabout way of asking some questions to try to clarify things in my mind about how much water we're all using individually. But I think that that we've got a couple of things we got to do, and one, like I say, is the educational side of it, and the others, as we're discussing here, I do think we need to come up with some sort of regulations or guidelines for what's going to be acceptable usage for new landscaping, and then also go back and try to work with people that have existing landscaping to try to minimize that use too.
Okay. Councilmember Dickens.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think that first of all, this issue came before the council a few weeks back, and I think that from my perspective, there's a couple of areas that are a little bit daunting. One is our municipal responsibility to provide adequate and reliable water supply for both our current users and for our reasonably projected growth expected into the future. So I think that's a paramount issue that we need to address. The daunting thing that I'm looking at is when we start looking at the solutions that granted, we need to move forward with looking at all the alternatives. As Councilmember Costello said, you know, we need to do a lot of education in regards to our conservation efforts as laid out in our general plan. If we could actually get our water users to utilize less water, then we could actually maintain probably a better surplus in reliability. The likelihood of that happening in the near future is probably going to take some time and so forth. But we still need to pursue other possibilities for surplus water. And that's where I have just a variety of questions that even within the staff and what the costs of doing these types of feasibility studies would be, and then who the partners might be in regards to addressing these issues with us, because it's not only as Councilmember Reynolds says, this is happening up and down the state of California. We're not unique in regards to the fact that we didn't do it. We've been remiss in not planning and looking forward. In reality, City of Arroyo Grande has been extremely proactive. If it weren't for the City of Arroyo Grande, Lopez Dam would not exist today. So I think we've been proactive. There are certainly questions as to what the cost of all this is going to mean, both to the city and then ultimately to the users. And I think those are going to be questions that can only be answered through the public process. But at this point, as I pointed out from my perspective, with some of my reluctancy, I'm certainly would like to move forward in directing staff to pursue an agreement to utilize the groundwater from other agencies, work with them to see if there's surplus that they're not using due to their state water allocations and so forth. I'm certainly in support of doing some sort of a tiered water rate structure, at least looking at that and seeing what the pros and cons would be, getting public feedback on that. But I think that's imperative that we actually put in a tiered system that might help address some of our conservation efforts. And certainly, even though I still have questions, I think it's important that we proceed with the design and design consultant for Well 10 to look at that particular property in that site for an additional well, because it's not it's actually in a different aquifer. So, to me, those are all immediate action items that we can pursue with a certain level of, at least from my point of view, a certain level of comfort, still, of course, with some questions. The others, as part of the what staff has laid out, are really, I think I have a lot of looming questions that I can't support wholeheartedly at this particular time. But I guess what I would also say is that I don't want to discourage staff from looking into 4, 5, 6, and 7. I think those things certainly need to be put remain on the table. We need to look at those possibilities. But I think in the as they come before us, I certainly am going to have a lot of questions as to as I'm sure my colleagues will as well, in regards to how those are going to benefit the city in the long run. In regards to the rest of the staff report and some of our implementation measures, I think that we're moving in the right direction. I think the more information that we can garner, the better we're going to be able to deal with these major issues. So at this point, those are really all my comments. So I think we're moving in the right direction, and I really believe that we need to focus on the fact that, the water
call when this item came before the council, what you see in the staff report is a summary of action that we've already taken. These things are already in motion.
Yes.
They're already going to come back to us. Our task this evening is to look at whether or not, from a mitigation standpoint, we want to focus on providing staff direction on, one, development of and adoption of a landscape ordinance that restricts water use for new development, and, two, continuing land use strategies to encourage higher density housing where appropriate. Is that what you're after this evening, Don?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, so that's what we're going to come back to, so be thinking about that particular issue when we wrap this up. Okay, Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think all of us have been concerned with water for a significant period of time, and so we're all running away with ideas of how we can fix the situation. And certainly, conservation is the top of the list, and it's something that we all want to do, and I'm just going to recap a little bit before I get into some of the other stuff. Conservation is great, and it will save us some water, but I don't see it as the long-term fix. I see it as a short-term mitigation, even though it might take a while to get it accomplished. There's two areas that I haven't heard about tonight, and I want to just reemphasize them. One is, and we talked a little bit about it at the last meeting when we talked about the highway landscaping, and that is the parks and the cemetery, and finding alternative sources of non-portable water or wastewater, whatever you want to call it. And I think that is something that still needs to be at the top of our list. Now, I want to go one step farther with that because I thought about this after I left the meeting last week. It's my understanding that there is a significant amount of wastewater that is sent to the ocean on a daily basis through the Oceana Sewer District. That water has to be at a quality acceptable to go into the ocean, which would imply to me that the quality is then acceptable to water my lawn or the park or the cemetery. So it appears to me that at some point we need to look at how do we recapture that water and bring it back into uses that, no, I don't want to drink it, and I'm sure nobody else does, but it can be used for other purposes that could save us a significant amount of acre feet per year. And right now, I don't know, do you know, Don, how much is going into the ocean daily?
Well, the plant is designed for 5 million gallons a day. I think only 2.5 is going into the plant, so something around 2.5 or so.
2.5 million gallons a day go into the ocean. Roughly. Pardon me?
7 acre feet
a day. Those are things we should be thinking about in new developments as they come along. How can that be accommodated? So there are ways to use other aspects of water as opposed to just letting it go down the sewer and into the ocean. Now, getting back to tonight, yes, I do think we should have landscape and irrigation requirements and control that. I think lot size is significant. I would think that the bigger the lots, which is shown by your table, I picked up out of reading all this that pretty much single-family residence, based on the size of the lot, uses more water because of the more landscaping requirements. Mm-hmm. And so we've already seen that with our current development pattern. So higher density would decrease our water usage per person within the city, just because of the size of the lots being smaller and not as much water being used for landscaping, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So it does appear to me that we need to move forward in both those areas, land density and landscape control. And I understood from you the last time that we already have in place, depending on our water usage, our drought conditions, landscape controls that we can put into place at some point, every other day, and then eventually just shutting it off.
That's correct. Yes, we do. Okay.
Do we have any rough estimate of how much water is used for landscaping throughout the city versus drinking water or other water sources? I mean, I saw 80% in here someplace. Was that?
It's generally 50 or 55% or 60%, somewhere around there, of the water that goes into your house meter or through your house meter goes somewhere else besides
personal use,
yeah.
Okay. So 50 or 60% of the water we're currently using is being used for landscaping or washing the car or whatever.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
A couple of questions, Don, or Rob. When we talk about higher densities, are we referring to higher density residential or mixed use? And are we referring to greater densities than what we currently have submitted in our housing element or that currently exists in our general plan?
We did not separate the commercial, industrial, or public facility use as land use categories. Mixed use includes some of the commercial potential, but on square foot for square foot and considering the relatively limited landscaping associated with most commercial industrial operations, their water utilization isn't as significant as multifamily. Higher density projects in the form of multifamily or PUDs that would be in the medium high or high medium density category, 4.5 to 9 units. We have not produced many high density projects, but Cortland Grand, as an example, is even higher than the 25 units per acre that senior residence provides for on a density per acre calculation. Basically, the land use intensity, because it does reflect the proportion of landscaping, the principal difference between a multifamily unit and a single family unit and a estate large lot single family units is landscape consumption. So per capita consumption is distorted by the large proportion of single family and large lot developments that Aurora Grande currently has. And I think when you read the conservation programs, it isn't just new development that might be affected by landscape design guidelines and standards. If we get into a tiered rate structure, I think existing residences are going to be economically attracted to retrofit of outdoor landscape use, particularly large lot. And public facilities, schools and city parks, as an example, have been landscaped with large turf areas, not all of which are utilized for playgrounds and might be more efficiently a drip system or xeriscape landscaping. So it might affect our own design standards, even with potable water. If we can go to non-potable sources, it becomes less of a concern.
I guess what I'm trying to reconcile in my own mind here, when we look at consumption rate, and I can certainly see the rationale on what we describe and what we've seen as estate lots, the large half-acre lots, even some of the quarter-acre lots that we see. We don't have too many of those in the matrix here. I see a tendency towards multifamily. But there's also been a tendency recently for us to approve residential development on much smaller lots. I currently live in an area where that's true. And in fact, there are other areas where the single-family residential lots are even smaller. Both front yard and backyard landscaping is at a minimum. So in my own mind, I'm trying to reconcile what it would take if we look at a square city block, what would be the difference in consumption in landscaping those smaller lots versus intensifying density with multifamily in that same area where you have a concentration of population, more toilets are flushing, more showers are going on, more water is being consumption. Would this or would it not, if we were to have some form of landscape restriction in the form of an ordinance, would it apply to those projects that are already approved?
The short answer is yes.
I think so.
You can make the landscape design guidelines and standards effective on any new building permits, and those have not received any kind of building approval.
Mm-hmm. With respect to Grace Lane, too, I believe we actually incorporated some landscaping restrictions into the conditions of approval.
So what we're talking about in the future, for the remainder of time that the city of Arroyo Grande permits any kind of single-family residences, that we would not see so much lawn or perhaps any lawn. What we would see is other forms of landscaping features, drip systems, drought-tolerant plants in place of turf.
Well, I certainly think that's the more severe case. I think there may be a reduction in the turf area to a certain percentage of the front yard area. I think that would probably be a more workable proposal. But, yeah, certainly that if you go to one side, you could see the xeriscaping front yards. That would be the extreme, I think.
And in what you're asking for this evening, then, would some of those alternatives be outlined in an ordinance that you would bring back to us, Don?
I certainly think we could put those types of analysis in the staff report and then develop the ordinance based on some of those analysis.
Okay. Well, given that, I would support providing direction to staff to develop some of these options and perhaps better define some options within the boundaries of an ordinance and have that come back for further discussion. And as far as some of the other strategies that we already have in place, I'm comfortable again with the action that that we took the other night. I think the strategies are sound, and so we'll wait. Some of those are going to be coming back as soon as November. Is that correct?
Yes. So we're planning on probably late November to bring those back for discussion and possible action.
All right.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
Could I make a comment?
Absolutely.
Will this landscaping ordinance come to the Planning Commission before? Because I've got several things that I would like to add to it, and I think that it would be a better ordinance if the Planning Commission could see it before it comes to
the Commission. It can, for sure. Yeah, and if it's the desire of the Commission to see that, I'm sure we would be able to.
Well, I think it would be appropriate.
Yeah.
I would rather that you guys see it first and take a shot at it and add comments and recommendations before it comes to us.
We can watch it on TV.
Yeah, we can watch it on TV.
You beat him to it.
Joe said that. We didn't say that. Any other comments?
I think we're on the right track, Mr. Mayor, as far as conservation and making people aware of what's going on, because this another year of this, and it's going to be a real serious situation. And we've got to have...
Well, I would think that there would be some strategy. I know folks that have RVs, maybe some of you have RVs, and there are several tanks. Boats are the same way. You know, you have the stuff that nobody wants to look at or consider or even talk about, but then you have something called a gray water tank, which is dishwashing stuff, laundry, that sort of thing, that could in fact maybe be filtered and recharged in some way if it was put back into the water table. Is that what you were talking about?
Well, actually, they're doing everything there, but I know that there were some communities that required
that individual homes, they capture the gray water and use that for their own landscaping. So instead of having to have a citywide program for that, I've heard of cities that do that also, but you can do it individually or even in a master plan for a neighborhood or something where you have a community park or whatnot.
I don't want to give the impression that the Sand District has not looked at these options. They have. They've looked at cleaning up the water to a significant to tertiary standards, putting it back up the creek and letting it flow out. And there were some issues related to temperature and the dissolved oxygen and those sorts of things that didn't fit with the fish. We looked at bringing it up and cleaning it up and bringing it up to the cemetery and the cost associated with that, and it was several thousand dollars an acre foot. So it became very costly. But they have looked at that. They're going to continue to look at that. And those are some of the things when they do finalize those reports we can bring to the council for your review and consideration at that time. But they are doing that, and I'm sure they will continue to do that.
Well, I was wondering, based on this discussion, if we should kind of add that back into those lists that were already approved, that we're going to be coming back with more information in November.
I would appreciate it.
Okay, Mr. Mayor. There's no other objections.
If I may, we actually had quite an in-depth presentation by John Wallace from the Sand District approximately 4 or 5 years ago, and the Sand District does have a comprehensive long-term master plan to look at tertiary treatment. The difficulty is at this particular time is the end user and where that water can actually the technology is there, and the master plan for the Sand District has been put in place for the potential capital improvements necessary to get us there. It's really about once you have it now, you know, who's going to pay for it and where's it going to go. The issue of recharge and putting it back in the groundwater basin for basically banking water is, I think, a very viable option, and it's something we need to look at. It's just a matter of where that's going to take place. But the public knows and the commission, I don't know if you were, some of you may not have been a participant in that particular process, but we have a plan that's been presented, and that might be something that might be beneficial to bring back in the near future to look at, because I know that was something that was certainly worthy of further discussion.
Well, positive cumulative impact on consumption, on the consumption rate. Is that what you were talking about doing?
Well, actually, I was talking about both those ideas, so I didn't realize about the other. No, I wasn't ready for that. But I especially think that your idea when you talk about on multifamily, where, because this table talks about unit, it didn't talk about person. And so I think the numbers might change a little bit if you start looking at packing a whole bunch of people into a tighter area. Now they are going to use more water because per person, obviously the landscape's going to go down. But in that, that'd be a perfect example where you could capture the water. I think there'd be definitely more than enough to do any kind of landscaping. And in a localized community, it can make a lot of sense in like a Berry Gardens. Or I think retro is very difficult to try to capture it under the slab. And so therefore, I think you really need to do it in new construction. But yeah, definitely.
Okay, thanks.
I think we need to look at all these potential options and keep our minds open to any of these tools that might be out there for us. So I'd recommend that we keep them on our radar screen. And as we go forward, just if it's appropriate, use it. Examine the positives. There may be some health effects that will preclude us from doing some of these things. But let's keep them open as options and look at their practicalities in the future.
Well, maybe, Don, since we're talking about a landscape ordinance here, maybe this last discussion, this last suggestion about new construction and the possibility of using some form of gray water recycling for landscaping purposes could be in some of the options that you might develop for the ordinance when you bring it back. See what we can come up with. Maybe take a look at what Scottsdale has done or some of the other jurisdictions that have had success with it.
I'd like to comment, at least before we develop the expectation that we're returning to the Planning Commission or City Council in November of 2004. We are in a development code update procedure that has been ongoing for 2 years, and with the September 28th actions, we will have completed the bulk of the commercial industrial mixed-use districts. Our intention was to return with the multifamily, and then during 2005, the single-family residential districts and landscape design guidelines and standards, if we're involving public participation, would come through that process to the Planning Commission, to the City Council. And I think it would be realistic to expect that by November 2005 you would have such an ordinance offered to you. Unless you're placing it at the top priority list and superseding current assignments, I think it's important that we discuss which year as well as which month.
Well, you brought this to us as far as a landscape ordinance. So, and I recognize this has to fit into someone's work plan. So I would suspect that, you know, obviously water conservation and this contributes to it is a priority for us.
It is a priority, and it is what we are intending to continue working on unless directed otherwise. And I think all of these components are there.
I'm just possibly a way to put a tank in the ground to capture the gray water. Mm-hmm. with a pump on it so that they can use that to water the lawn with or water the flowers around the house. That I think that could be done pretty simply.
Yeah, and I know instances where that has been done. I think we probably need to contact them and see how well it
might pass that works. By some of the developers when they come in and see what their mm-hmm. feeling would be about that.
Can I just comment on that real quick? Because this was certainly in Santa Barbara in the late 80s. This was one of the big discussion items, and I will say that the health department in particular was really, really negative on that idea because they felt it was a huge vector for disease, that you had all these individual residential homes essentially becoming some sort of treatment plant and the potential for some sort of cross-contamination. So I know that at that time there was a lot of this, and almost none of them were enacted. Now, on commercial sites, there's been discussion of that because you have a lot more quality control, if you will, when you have individual commercial sites. So, I mean, certainly something worth looking into, and maybe they pulled it off in Arizona. And certainly the technology is better now than it was 10 years ago. But I will say that opportunity seemed obvious since, frankly, everybody was doing it with buckets. but at the time when they were going to try to formally do it, there are very significant problems with the health department on that.
Any other comments?
One more.
Yeah, Jim. John.
pardon me. I remember the last drought that we went through, and some of the suggestions that everybody came up with that after it started raining, they never got implemented. Mm-hmm. And part of the problem is the length of time that these things take. They kind of get put off. And one of them that goes right in with what we're talking about was to put dual systems outside of every new residence, a gray water and a brackish water system, and then wire them together. And then when the technology came, those houses would already have the separate systems coming out of the foundations. And that just never got implemented. And if we had done it at that time, all the back part of Rancho Grande would have had that in place. And that's a significant number of homes. So I guess my point is we need to come up with these ideas and make them work, and not when it starts raining, say, well, we'll do it next time. Thank you.
Point well taken. Anything else? Any other comments for the good of the cause?
Just one quick question. Are we going to see tiered water come back, too? Is that part of what's going to come back in November, or is that farther down the road?
That's part of those November options, yes.
Then we should mention that one thing that came up at commission meeting the other night was the fact that density includes the granny units. We require the granny units to have one hookup, so possibly 1 meter, so possibly they would be on a higher tier, and so maybe that's an issue that should be revisited as to if they're on a tiered, they would be maybe penalized because there are
some, basically, you're asking people to consider lifestyle changes with their water use. I think it's important that we do a better job educating people to what the consequences are, why we're doing it. I was surprised to hear Don's number about the lack of retrofitting that's gone on. I was under the mistaken impression that we had been retrofitted out. So I think we can do a better job, educating the public on both those painful issues that are coming forward, because I find tiered water rather painful, if it very necessary. But I would just hope that the city council would take that into consideration as they move forward, because I think you're going to get a lot of people up in arms when they when they first realize what tiered water really means to them. So I would just ask that you take that into consideration.
That issue came up, Tim, when we discussed this at the council meeting, and I think we all agreed that before we implement tiered water, that there's got to be a focused education program with a view towards perhaps clarifying the whole program and as it relates to conservation. Part of that education, John mentioned in public comment, I think he was at that meeting, was just some better understanding on an individual family basis how much consumption is really taking place, and our water bills don't tell us that. And staff is working on some form of a crosswalk now that will give that information to the average family in the city so that they can say, oh, okay, well, what this really means is I'm using, you know, water at a rate that exceeds what I'm supposed to be doing. So, you know, let's try to control it on a family basis now that we understand. So there's a lot of things that we can do better in the form of education, I think, before we move into any kind of a tiered water rate system. We may have to go there, but there are some things we can do before that happens.
Thank you.
And we have already begun that effort. You'll notice in the new Stagecoach Express going out, the first article on that is in there. We're preparing a brochure that's going to go out with the water bills, and they'll be kind of expanding out from that on a number of other efforts. So we're getting it started.
Thank you.
Any other comments? Did you get enough from us?
Yes, we did.
Rob?
Yep.
Okay. That will take us to item number 6, which is our final citizen input, comments, and suggestion. Any member of the audience would like to come forward, make any kind of comment with regard to items that we've talked about or any other item that you wish to talk about? Okay, seeing none, we will close that and move to item number 7. And this is a formal action, motion to adjourn.
Salute.
Okay. I want to thank all of the planning commissioners for being here this evening. I think this was a good meeting, and hopefully we can do it more frequently when these kinds of issues arise. So good night, everyone. Thanks.